Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hello, welcome back to another installment of the DDG Politics Podcast. So this is already episode 7, lucky number 7. Today, we're going to try to get through everything. We've got a lot going on, so thankful for those midweek episodes, because there's no way we could even attempt to cover it all. Sorry again about the super chats. We're just boomer minded when it comes to streaming. We'll remember them eventually, I promise. And also major solidarity with the Galloways. Chris and I both know what it's like to be detained. I've had my electronics taken. I'm sure you have as well, right? So yeah, not under the Terrorism Act, but solidarity. Chris, how are you? How was your meeting?
It was good. It was good. Of course, thankfully, I just drank tea and was able to stay away from all other liquids that could have been dangerous at this period of time. But I will say, I just want to echo again, solidarity with my comrade, my beloved comrades, George and Gayatri. The Galloways are amazing. We were here together in Russia for the World Youth Festival, which we attended together. I got to speak for my first time with George on a panel. And it was just the two of us, and it was amazing. And I love them. They're like family. And really, I hope that they continue to struggle in the UK as we do in the US and in so many other countries in the West for freedom of speech, for the freedom to travel, for the freedom to be activists and to believe what we want to believe and to struggle without us having to take loyalty oaths to Israel or loyalty oaths to this monarch or that political party. But ultimately, that we continue to stand in solidarity with the global South, with the multipolar world, and we continue to do the work together.
Today, we are going to talk about Trump's flipping on Russia, but I feel like he flips every other day. So we had this tweet on the 23rd. That was the Truth Social post. I don't know what they're called. I think they're called Truths. This was right after, which is funny, right after meeting Zelensky at the UN, he posted a 600-word statement saying Ukraine could not only take back all of its land, but maybe even go further, that Ukraine is in a position to fight and win all of Ukraine back in its original form with Europe's financial support and obviously NATO's help. And this is when he called Russia a paper tiger and that they were in big military or big economic trouble. He ended by reaffirming the U.S. will keep supplying weapons to NATO, which NATO can then hand off to Ukraine and they can use as they see fit. We also had Zelensky.
What would you tell somebody who works at the Kremlin today? Would you tell him to make sure he knows where the nearest bomb shelter is?
First of all, they have to know where their bomb shelters are. If they will not stop the war, they will need it in any case.
Direct threats on the Kremlin. Ambassador of the UK says,
but Trump is saying he's very disappointed by Putin, that Putin has let him down. You know, that he has a great relationship, but it doesn't make any difference. So he's clearly annoyed.
And so what?
We should, is that the we point? Should, is that your should, position? So what? It doesn't matter.
Do you
matter.
Think we should be guided by his controversial statements each time? Not at all. We are in operation, a serious operation. Well, situation in Ukraine is conflict. It is fundamental interest for us. We needed to resolve it once and forever. It is not linked with European security only or other NATO countries. We have a problem with Ukraine.
But things seem to have gone backwards, don't they? I mean, because he's now talking about selling weapons to NATO. Trump is saying, we will keep selling weapons to NATO. Yeah. NATO can give those weapons to Ukraine, and Ukraine can fight Russia back. And, I mean, that's not progress, is it?
American military industrial complex is happy. As you have seen, as soon as Trump has said that, the race of defense industry and stock exchange has gone up immediately after that. So what President Trump is doing is, of course, that this is for the benefit of the military industrial complex of the United States. And it is easy because they are selling now this weapon for European money. And it's big money, really.
But it's bad for peace, isn't it?
Europe can do whatever it is. Europe is bringing it to Ukraine. Of course, this does not bring a settlement closer. It is only delaying all of that while Ukraine continues to fight.
We also have Ursula.
Turkey did it 10 years ago.
Yep.
And didn't suffer consequences necessarily.
No, and it's a principle of NATO and Article 5. So
what's taken you so long? I know you're not NATO, but what's taken the world so long? Because Russia has been really testing for such a long time. Is it time now to punch back in the nose?
Russia is testing on all fields. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a hybrid war that we experienced since many, many years, that Russia is leading against the democracies of the European Union and others. And therefore, we fight back on all the different fields. And as I said, it's a decision of NATO, but I would be very clear, you don't touch our territory.
And you were a former defense minister, I remember, when we first met for Germany.
Everyone's encouraging war. The only person that points out why is the Russian.
Great.
This? I think we talked about it. We've been talking about it on our streams. I wrote about it back in May that this war would be fully privatized and not end. And now we're here.
Look, it's not only is it not ending, it looks like we're going to get a ramp up here. And if the news of the Tomahawks and this and that is anything, you know, on the horizon, I think that we could be getting to a point where we're going to see a massive escalation in the bombardment of civilian centers and populations. So this special military operation has been confined to military targets. And of course, some of those military targets have been placed in civilian infrastructure, and many have pointed this out. However, the Ukrainian fascist forces have bombarded civilian centers since 2014, right? We remember those early jets flying over Donetsk and bombing, and it's been nonstop since then. If the Ukrainian fascist forces begin to attack the Russian Federation using Western weaponry, including European bought U.S. weaponry, I think that we could be in for a major, major escalation. If not beyond the borders, then within Ukraine, you're going to see a massive ramp up in the use of technologies and forces that haven't been necessarily deployed at the levels that they could be deployed. Because let's be honest, the Russian Federation is not the Zionist entity. They will not level these cities because they see them as their brothers and sisters. They see them as a unified people in a shared history, right? If they want to play that game, there's much more destructive firepower that could be witnessed here. And so I think that that's the danger here.
And just so our viewers know, when you mentioned the Tomahawks, this is from J.D. Vance.
Would you be okay with them having Tomahawk missiles and the threat that that would pose and the possible escalation it would pose? Because there was a time when you were very much in favor of, you know, backing away from this situation in terms of our support of Ukraine.
Well, one of the things I've always said, Martha, is I wanted the Europeans to step up in a big way. I wanted us, the United States, to stop shoveling money and weaponry to a conflict that was so far away, when I felt like the Europeans, with all due respect for them, were not actually taking their fair share of the burden. Because of the president's leadership, you now have the Europeans buying weaponry from the United States as opposed to us giving it. And you asked this question about Tomahawks. It's something the president's going to make the final determination on. What the president is going to do is what's in the best interest of the United States. United States of America. That's the driving light between his foreign policy decisions, between his defense policy decisions, and that will be the same heuristic that we apply to how we answer this question about Tomahawks. I'll let the president speak to it, but I know that we're having conversations this very minute about that issue.
This is when Nick would scream, and what he means by American interests is the interests of the ruling class. He's talking about American interests as in private interests and Peter Thiel interests. But could we see Tomahawk missiles flying to the Kremlin? Also, yes, J.D. Vance has a heavier eye than I do at this point. He's just really going nuts with the eyeliner.
I will say that if the Tomahawks are given and they are deployed and used at the Kremlin, I think, I think that that would be such a powerful choice and such a dangerous red line. I think that there would be some in the Russian military and in the civilian society who would advocate the use of tactical battlefield nuclear weapons. I really believe it. I can't imagine attacking the Kremlin, the seat of power of the largest nuclear power in the world, and that going unanswered on the battlefield. I think actually, instead of getting to the tactical nuclear weapon, I think Russia will conscript. I think that there could be a mobilization. I think that there could be a call, a nationwide call to arms. And I think that that would be that would be the Rubicon for the West. Russia's not playing anymore. It wouldn't be a special military operation. It would be a declaration of war at that point.
Yeah, I agree. And the producer in the private chat just mentioned to me that remember the pivot to Asia policy paper? If you guys aren't reading these policy papers, you're already like you're behind the curve. You need to read Pivot to Asia, which is a RAND paper. You need to read Path to Persia. And you need to read what's the other one? Stretching Russia Thin or something like that. Or Extending Russia. Extending Russia. These are all playing out right in front of us. J.D. Vance also had a message for Russia.
Our view is we want peace here. We've been actively pursuing peace from the very beginning of the administration, but the Russians have got to wake up and accept reality here. A lot of people are dying. They don't have a lot to show for it. How many more people are they willing to lose? How many more people are they willing to kill for very little, if any, gain in the military advantage on the ground there? I think the answer is hopefully not that much, but certainly our attitude here is we're going to keep on working for peace, and we hope the Russians actually wake up to the reality on the ground.
You just said that you were doing the best thing for the American interests by selling more weapons to Ukraine, and then in the next breath you say we're just going to continue to push for peace with Tomahawks?
Listen, the Russians know the cost of the war. It's not the Russians are fully awake. I'm sorry. It's the West that's been sleeping since 2014. And actually, they haven't been sleeping. The populations have been more or less sleeping. The governments have been actively participating in overthrowing a democratically elected government in Kiev, fomenting revolutions like we're seeing in Georgia and trying to rig elections there and trying to bring them into NATO, doing chaos in the Caucasus with Armenia, Azerbaijan, chaos in Moldova, as we'll talk about, chaos in the Balkans with Bosnia-Herzegovina and Republika Srpska. I'm sorry, but the general image here is not that they are asleep. It's that most people are asleep to what the West is doing. And Russia is fully awake and has been saying it nonstop going back decades. I mean, you clearly can see Putin in our intro, 2008 in Munich, right? At the Security Forum, talking about the difference between a unipolar world order and the emerging multipolar world order, that the U.S. domination, U.S. hegemony, it cannot be a just world order with that. I'm sorry, but the Russians have been talking about it until there's air on the tongue. It's the people in the West who haven't been paying attention. But everybody in the Global South has been paying attention. And that's why these developments that we've been seeing over the past few years are going the way that they're going.
What do you think about, it came out on the 26th, it's kind of been developing and being pieced together. Hungarian media reported on the 26th that the Kiev regime is preparing false flag drone attacks on Romania and Poland in order to blame Russia and provoke a direct war between NATO and Moscow. This plan includes repairing downed or captured Russian drones, equipping them with live warheads, launching them toward Poland and Romania, and then conducting disinformation campaigns across Europe to accuse Russia. Sorry, that's the dog. Maria Zakharova says that we have never been closer to World War III in modern history. Let me stop. I'm so sorry.
No worries. No worries. I like it. It's super real. No, I will say, listen, Zakharova's statement is a serious one. The Russians aren't too apt to kind of play with this language. And it's not colorful language, so to speak. It's very serious language. The issue of the drones in Poland and Romania, I think, are less about the Russian Federation itself and more about Pridnestrovi and what's going on in Moldova. I think that if a conflict is going to drag the Russian Federation into confrontation with NATO, it's going to be to try to open a second front in Pridnestrovi and to try to bog down the Russians there. And we'll talk about Moldova. I'm going to save this analysis, yes. But I want to say that there is tremendous escalations in the works to try to drag in by force the Europeans, some of whom don't want to go in, like the Hungarians and the Slovakians definitely don't want to be dragged into a confrontation like this. But you hear that the Americans keep telling the Europeans, take more of the burden, and stop buying Russian gas. And we had the Hungarian foreign minister say, we're not stopping. You can't tell us what to do in that realm.
And here it is. Zelensky threatens energy again. Europe must stop importing any Russian oil and gas. Yes, there are risks, but alternative logistics may cost more. So you're going to pay more, but a way must be found to stop buying Russian energy. And then this is more fear-mongering, kind of maybe setting the stage for this false flag, at least in Poland, because we know that the Poles are the easiest ones to get drummed up. Speaking of Poles, Starmer and MERS are just absolutely tanking in the polls. All of this surrounding an attempt to create World War III, it's all very telling, you know, as your polling drops, your economy falls. Why not start World War III? And we'll get to Moldova, but quickly, Russia responded last night. And Ukraine. That was Ukraine bombing itself with Patriots, which are falling all over Kiev. They parked their Patriot launchers in the city in residential areas. They've hit residential buildings. The debris all over the place. But Ukraine has also been on a full-on assault on Russian energy infrastructure. So it's important to note that this isn't all just Russia beating the crap out of Ukraine. There's a bit of tit-for-tat going on. They have today hit the power plant near Belgorod, and Belgorod's without power and internet for right now. So there is an assault. But all right, so let's get to Moldova. Moldova's having parliamentary elections today. Do you want to kind of talk about what's kind of going on there? We have some results are in. It looks like Maia Sandu's party has taken the lead. It seems that ahead of time, you know, we had some opposition parties were banned. An interesting post came out from the BBC today, which I thought was important to point out to our viewers. It says polls will be closing around Moldova in a few minutes with the vote count to begin at once. There will be no exit polls. Why not? Why aren't we getting any exit polls? But analysts say we could be getting a result by around 2200 GMT, 1 a.m. in Chisinau. Results, this is the other one. Results for the diaspora are expected to come in last, potentially changing the outcome of the vote. So it's already set up, I think. Today, Rudy Barr reports on all of these bridges of being blocked off across the river, which holds off Transnistria, so they can't vote. What have we got going on here?
First of all, as way of just a general explanation, Moldova, which consists of what was once known as Bessarabia, which was a very important territory for the Russian Empire, especially for Catherine the Great and the ones that followed, who continued to expand the Russian Empire and incorporate what were Orthodox lands back into the Russian Empire. It's expanding, of course. We won't get into Third Rome, Second Jerusalem, Byzantine history, Wallachian princes, all this stuff, because it's quite complex. And actually, there was Wallachian princes, Greek princes, you know, Phanariots, the Russians, everybody was wanting to build this massive new Byzantium. And in any case, nationalism came and it was a whole disaster. But in any case, Moldova was part of the Soviet Union, right? It was a constitutive republic. After the liquidation of the Soviet Union, Moldova, of course, went through this wave, of course, as most of the post-socialist states, post-Soviet states, as sort of, you know, the Western, you know, they came in, okay, time for democracy, blah, 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 human rights, all of this stuff, liberal values. But one part did not, and that was what is popularly known as Transnistria. Of course, that's not the correct term. It's Prednestrovi, it's PMR, right? So PMR, which maintains, by the way, a Soviet form of government. Their passports still have the hammer and sickle. Their flag still has the hammer and sickle. It's the same as it was during Soviet times. It's considered to be the last Soviet republic that still exists today. All of its orders and medals and everything still have the hammer and sickle. Lenin's still out in front. So in that sense, this territory, which comprises, which is now separate entity, it's declared its independence from Moldova and its willingness to join the Russian Federation. Russia has a military bases there and soldiers there. And of course, it's at the hotspot because it borders Ukraine and Moldova on the two sides, right? So, and it's a little bit, it's landlocked. So that's another problem. There was a huge issue recently about energy to that territory. In any case, Moldova years ago elected the Communist Party, the Socialist Party, but the Communists, in free, fair, and democratic elections. It was one of the first instances of a post-Soviet state re-electing a Communist Party to power. We saw that in Tajikistan in the 90s with the Communist Party of Tajikistan. We also saw that in Moldova. Now, after the loss of that ruling coalition, then came the PAS Party with Sandu and all of these, neoliberal types from, you know, the Western kind of backed crew. They have been trying to suppress what has been popular pro-Russian sentiment, patriotism, Russian nationalism, nostalgia, Orthodox Christianity, traditional values. Much of what we've seen in Romania is the playbook is in Moldova as well. Both countries, of course, share common history, common legacy, language, blah, blah, blah. So I think it's important for viewers to understand that like Ukraine, Georgia, and Romania, Moldova is also in the crosshairs here, very much so, because what happens tonight is going to set the agenda. And we should know that on the agenda is a military front opening up against Prednestrovi. And that means the Russian Federation as guarantor of Prednestrovi's security to probably get involved. And if that means getting involved, it means an active confrontation on the other side of Ukraine. And of course, that's the side that's past Odessa. So we're talking about a whole nother front opening up. Limited access, of course, from the Black Sea. Aerial reinforcements will be needed. How that can happen over Ukrainian territory, over Moldovan territory, I have no idea. But ultimately, there's a real fear that it could either mean open hostility and confrontation and massive losses of life and the possibility of an evacuation of the population there, which would be, I think, catastrophic. And it would bode very poorly for Russian prestige. So I think that they will fight They will fight it out. They won't allow Prednestrovi to fall. We'll see what ends up happening. But there's a lot at play here. And I think everyone has to see what's coming out. My source has said that the opposition, which is against PAS, was in the lead. Now some are saying that actually that has flipped. We'll see what happens. But I think that if PAS wins tonight, there has already been election interference because I applied to be an election observer for these elections and was denied in violation of Moldova's constitutional provisions for election observing. I've done election observing before, but you can see that there has been a real constriction of who can observe the elections, who can participate, polling stations, where those polling stations are.
Right.
There's a lot going on here.
Only two polling stations in all of Russia, which hosts the largest Moldovan diaspora. And I think that there were over 250 across the EU. So, you know, you guys do the math. We saw that I think that we have some clips of what went on here as the ballot boxes in Italy. Ballot boxes full 20 minutes after they opened. That's them taking them around. Number one was PAS, so they're telling them vote the first block. We also have Pavel Durov, who says, about a year ago, while I was stuck in Paris, the French intelligence services reached out to me through an intermediary asking me to help the Moldovan government censor certain Telegram channels ahead of the presidential elections. After he reviewed the channels, he declined. The intermediary informed him that in exchange for this cooperation, French intelligence would say good things about me. So we're bribing our social media owners. You don't even have to bribe the American ones. They're already compromised. But shortly thereafter, the Telegram team received a second list of so-called problematic Moldovan channels. Unlike the first, nearly all of these channels were legitimate and fully compliant with our rules. Their only commonality was that they voiced political positions disliked by the French and Moldovan governments. We refused to act on this request.
Crazy, crazy, crazy. And also, it's been noted that a lot of propaganda in Moldova by PAS and its supporters and the Europeans has been Telegram is used by Russian disinformation to spread this, to spread Russian propaganda, to lie about what's going on. So Telegram is like X, is at one of those crosshairs about who controls the narrative, who's controlling these platforms, who has the ability to block people, to give information on people. It's a real dangerous, I think that it's a real danger for freedom of speech, for the freedom of expression, and for the privileged communications that we have and the ability to access, you know, media sources that we want and that are popular. And I think it's very scary what's going on. These people are talking about human rights and claiming all these liberal freedoms. And in the meantime, what are they doing? Blocking anybody who disagrees with them.
It's insane. I thought we don't need USAID, guys. Remember I told you that? We don't need these things. They do it privately. They just strong arm social media owners. They just implant people inside the country. They don't need USAID to do this stuff. It's all been privatized. Right. Speaking of the US, we had a UN extravaganza this week. We got a little bit through it on Wednesday. I highly recommend you guys go back and watch our episode with Dan Kovalik, where we talk about more about the Levant, West Asia, Jolani, and that sector. Lavrov, obviously a showstopper, always. Let's play what I am considering my favorite clip and the one that did the best on Twitter.
One of the enduring outcomes of that war was the creation of the United Nations. The principles of its charter agreed upon by the founding fathers of our organization continue to serve as a shining beacon of international cooperation. They embody centuries of experience of the coexistence of states and remain fully relevant in the age of multipolarity. The only thing that remains is for all member states, without exception, to adhere to those principles in full, in their entirety, and as they are interconnected. In practice, however, things look different. Widespread, gross violations of the principle of the sovereign equality of states are undermining faith in justice itself and leading to crises and conflicts. The root of the problem lies in the incessant attempts to divide the world into us and them, into democracy and autocracy, into a blooming garden and a jungle, those who are at the table and those who are on the menu, into the chosen ones who are allowed everything and the rest who for some reason are obliged to serve. We advocate for unquestioning adherence to the principle of equality. It is the guarantee that all countries will be able to take their rightful place in the world order, regardless of their military might, the size of their population, or the size of their territory and economy.
Guiding us into us and them. I posted it because I knew the him saying the chosen ones. Really get some people going. So
who's chosen?
So yeah, I really loved that clip. Lavrov went on a little bit of a tirade at the UN. Did you get to watch Lavrov at all at the UN?
I watched parts of it. Yeah.
He also asked, why did they wait so long? I don't have the clip, but he did ask about Palestine. Why did they wait so long?
Why all these states recognize it now? We've been there for a long time. What's going on, right?
Yeah. And of course, we've got the hot tamales from Latin America who came in screaming. Here's Gustavo Petro.
Las naciones del mundo entonces aportarán hombres y mujeres entrenados y armados para configurar ese gran ejército. Tiene que ser más grande que el de los Estados Unidos. Por eso, desde aquí, desde Nueva York, le pido a todos los soldados del ejército de los Estados Unidos no apuntar contra la humanidad sus fusiles. Desobedezcan la orden de Trump. Obedezcan la orden de la humanidad. Yo mismo me arrodillé como cristiano ante las tumbas de miles de soldados norteamericanos que murieron en los campos de Europa luchando contra Hitler.
This comes after his UN speech, where he said he wants to put together an army of the willing in Colombia to go and stop the genocide in Palestine. Of course, his visas was revoked, but what timeline is this where the president of Colombia is in the streets with Roger Waters telling our military to disobey Trump's orders and obey the order of humanity?
When I saw that clip, I did a double take. I said, where are we? What's going on? You know, what's happening here? The president of another country in Latin America is on the streets of New York. Roger Waters just right behind, and he's like saying, "Don't disobey their orders." It felt like a throwback to Vietnam, but then a fast forward that like presidents of other countries are doing it in the United States. Wild, really wild,
really insane. Of course, his visa was revoked, and he had to head home before he got arrested. But and also keep in mind, guys, this is Gustavo Petro's last appearance at the UN. So I guess it was a go big and then go home type of scenario. But what a contrast to Javier Milei, who was begging for bailouts from the Zionist conglomeration and has had to cancel Bibi's visit because he's afraid that it will negatively impact his reputation. So
I thought Javier with this afuera, I thought there's supposed to be an economic miracle now. Everything's supposed to be perfect there.
We got to wait until, you know, the free market works itself out. The invisible hand of capitalism is coming.
With bailout. For me, but not for thee, you know?
Yeah, socialism for Milei, you know, the banks, stuff like that. This is
Ayn Rand Foundation getting, you know, bailed out during COVID.
I mean, he learns from the best. He did a crypto scam, you know, he did a whole big party with Elon. He's learning. So now he gets his bailout. He gets his reward.
Yep.
While all of this is going on, just another thing to note, Italy and Spain did launch military ships to protect the flotilla, which I thought was interesting. Not so much Spain, almost expected, still based. Surprised at Italy, but Italy is pushing a military boat out there to guard the flotilla from being attacked, which it's been attacked multiple times. We've spoken to people on it. We thought it was mechanical stuff, and that was the first attack, but then after that they became more frequent and on multiple ships. So keep your eyes on the flotilla as well. So we're pivoting over to Gaza. What was revealed this week is Trump has a 21-point plan that he has supposedly revealed to the Arabs. So on the sidelines of the UN, Trump met with the Arab leaders. He said that he would promise that Israel wouldn't annex any more of the West Bank. A, how are you going to do that? B, they're doing that right now. What are they talking about?
He's clearly not stopping anything.
Yeah. And then, so I started to look into it, and then all these articles come out at the same time. So this article comes out this week. Tony Blair is in discussions to run the transitional Gaza Authority.
Yikes.
Right.
That guy didn't even run a foundation.
Never mind
the government or a transitional authority.
Remember, we talked about this. Even you and I talked. It might have been with Nick, but I feel like I talked about it with you too. In August, Tony Blair was at the White House meeting with Jared Kushner, Witkoff, and Trump. So we already know how that's going. Now, if I can remember, well, you know what? It actually doesn't matter. I don't need to screen share for it, but the Great Trust. Now, I'll share a link to the thread in the chat. But if you guys remember, we did a post, and I think we even did some shows about the Great Trust, which is a plan that was come up with by the technocrats and Tony Blair's institution. Tony Blair has his own think tank, apparently. So, and the Serbs, I hope there's some Serbs in the chat. You'll laugh at this. They want to give Palestine the Kosovo model.
Yikes.
I'm not even sure what the Kosovo model is.
I want to let everybody know Kosovo and Metohija are Serbia and always will be and always have been. And that's the end of it. No, end of story.
What was the Kosovo? I don't even know what the Kosovo plan is.
Carve up, destroy, once prosperous socialist state, carve it up. And, you know, there we go. It's now hosts one of the largest U.S. military installations in the Balkans and in Eastern Europe. And it's a great place for organ harvesting, drug trafficking, gang violence, gun running, you name it. And black sites, by the way, where you can, grab people in the middle of the night and take them to Kosovo to torture them to get information for your covert operations.
That's where my mind went. I was like, oh, we need another human trafficking node. Like, is that what we're human organ and drug trafficking node? If you guys can look into it on your own, I won't go into too much detail because we're way over time anyway. But you can look into the Gaza International Transitional Authority. They have a Wikipedia, which is kind of being built as we go on. But it does. The proposal is this should just tell you everything you need to know. The proposal is modeled on earlier transitional administrations established by the United Nations in West New Guinea, Cambodia, Eastern Slavonia, Kosovo, and East Timor. Those are all just huge success stories of the UN and Tony Blair and all of these people. Yes, just let's follow that model. Let's follow the Vietnam model. Why don't we just like, I don't even know what we're doing. But anyway, so Trump does reveal a 21-point plan. The full plan was published today in Times of Israel. So you can read all of them. A lot
how
of it's
plans first. That's what I want to know. How does Times of Israel get to publish it first? How do they have the plans first?
How did Jerusalem Post have Charlie Kirk's death first? We'll never know how they we'll get all know. These.
A lot of questions unanswered.
They got so many clues. Anyway, the full 20. Yeah, and that is the only place I could find the full 21 points. The full 21-point plan is in there. What what they were nice to say, put a point that Israel agrees not to carry out future strikes in Qatar.
Oh, that's nice. We won't violate your sovereignty again, you know?
Right. And it's all like wishy-washy bullcrap platitudes. Nick is in the studio and we'll bring him up in a minute. But so we have that to look forward to, the 21-point plan. 25% of Gazans are in favor of international control. Abbas says the PA is ready to take over a non-military role. U.S. sees the Saudis as essential. And MBS insists any plan must end in a Palestinian state, which obviously is going to be rejected.
I don't know what kind of world they're living in. What Palestinian state? They're taking more. They destroyed a huge chunk of the Palestinian state that would exist. And they're actively settling the other part.
Nick is here to complain because he got banned from YouTube, but I'm going to make him talk about our last segment anyway. Hi, yeah, Nick.
I'm down for whatever. I'm just glad to be on here. What's popping? Man.
Nick is
glad to talk about whatever. I just left the meeting where my team was they managed to convince me not to rage quit YouTube forever. I was like, fuck it, I'm done forever. They managed to convince me.
Don't quit. You can probably get it back.
Yeah, it's all good. But we can talk about whatever. You guys know I'm down for whatever.
No,
I was able to catch the last 15 minutes or so. You guys' coverage.
Is perfect because the last segment is the Zionist takeover of the United States. So in June, Israel's government media office approved a 106, well, that's shekels, $45 million no-bid contracts to Google, YouTube, Twitter, and other, this thing called Outbrain, which is, I don't feel like explaining it to you, but I did do a thread on it not too long ago. These contracts run through December, and they're part of an entire, like, operation that they're doing online, I guess. So let's get to some of these clips. Obviously, Bibi spoke at the UN. So here's the beginning.
Please, order in the hall. Please, order in the hall. Please, order in the hall. Please, order in the hall.
I mean, I guess something's better than nothing, but let's watch what he actually said.
Half the Houthi leadership in Yemen, gone. Yahya Sinwar in Gaza, gone. Hassan Nasrallah in Lebanon, gone. The Assad regime in Syria, gone. Those militias in Iraq, well, they're still deterred. And their leaders, if they attack Israel, will also be gone. And for Iran's top military commanders and its top atomic bomb scientists, well, they're gone too.
You want to know what else is gone? Israel's economy. 60,000 businesses. At what cost, sir? The entire world turning against them. The UN walking out on you. Those are all things that are gone as well, I would say.
Their Hasbro is gone. That's what's gone.
Oh, it's not gone. It's just getting worse.
The head of urban warfare studies, Colonel John Spencer. He's perhaps...
I need to stop you right there. Colonel John Spencer, the Twitter guy from Mario Spaces. That's who Bibi's talking about at the UN. Okay, let's get back to it.
The head of urban warfare studies, Colonel John Spencer, he's perhaps the world's greatest expert on urban warfare. And he says, Israel is applying more measures to minimize civilian casualties than any military in history. And because we're doing that, the ratio of non-combatant to combatant casualties is less than 2-1 in Gaza. That's an astoundingly low ratio, lower than NATO's wars in Afghanistan and Iraq.
a Twitter space propagandist told me so. How the hell would John Spencer be the world's leading person in guerrilla warfare? What guerrilla wars?
As guerrilla wars.
They've never won. We've never won a guerrilla war in history.
And who is he talking to? When you listen to the content, and I'm asking rhetorically because we know the UN nation states walked out, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the UN nation states walked out. Who is he selling the victories of the Israeli conquest to? The American people.
That's it.
He's trying to sell Israeli victory to the American people. And also he's trying to save his ass at home because a lot of people like Bernie Sanders, they like to pretend that Netanyahu is like this rogue actor who is driving Israel into a warmongering state. He's bragging about his neocon victory in order to appease their genocidal Israeli public. What does that say about the public that exists in Israel that this is a winning message? Because as you guys mentioned, as we all know, he wasn't talking to the UN there. Who is this message? These are the question I always ask myself whenever you see these leaders talk to these bodies. Who is your message geared towards? When you see what Netanyahu is talking about, that says everything about how sick the Israeli society and public is, right? You guys get my point?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sick. It gets worse.
We crippled Hezbollah, taking out most of its leaders and much of its weapons arsenal. You remember those beepers? The pagers? We paged Hezbollah. And believe me, they got the message.
So you're bragging about war crimes?
War crimes. In the UN.
Yikes.
That's why I played it. Not because, you know, we know they're appalling and they do appalling things. It's because we're like, this is full anarchy. We're just bragging about war crimes at the UN.
Yeah. This is the end of the so-called liberal world order where there's international rule and norms and ethics and standards and law. Never was, actually. I believe what Mersheimer and many others have said and what other political scientists said, that the world system is anarchic. Whoever has the bigger guns, whoever can do their power projection and can fund it, supply it, finance it, and maintain that and expand it if they can, they're the ones that have the command in that area. Other than that, nobody can say anything, right? You see, who's holding him accountable? The world public has held him accountable, but the world institutions, nothing, zero, zero.
You guys ever seen those Zionist influencer accounts and propaganda accounts, and they have like a pager as their emoji?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we have shit like the Cuban flag. Some people have like the Russian flag. I don't have a lot of emoji. I have the gi. I have a gi to represent my 10 years of training jiu-jitsu. So I have like the gi and the fist. That's my everyone has emoji. Let you know what your style is. So Zionists, they have pagers as their emoji.
Can you imagine somebody having a noose or somebody having like, I don't know, something like what?
The Zionist humor is sick. I'm glad you got what I'm saying, Chris. You guys see how sick Zionist humor is? And they joke about this all the time. That's what Yahoo wants to bring up at the UN. Oh, you guys see the page? You know, them little kids we blew up?
Yep.
That's not funny, bro. What is wrong with you people? And these are Zionist Telegram accounts, or I should say Israeli Telegram accounts. One of the most popular ones is just people laughing at dead Palestinian children.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, I don't even like comparing them to the Nazis because this is a whole new thing. Like, because I don't like centralizing everything on Nazism. I think a lot of people do that too much. This is a brand new thing that we are seeing. Because there was a lot of Germans who was repulsed when it was revealed the crimes of the Hitler regime. Mm-hmm. Israelis are laughing and they are with what their state is doing every step of the way. So I'm not downplaying what the Nazis did. I think people need to stop saying that. Because we're seeing some brand new shit. Like, people are not even going to be talking about Nazis anymore. We're like, man, you in 2030, they're going to be like, you're governing just like the Israelis did. What are you, Netanyahu?
Nick, can you imagine we're talking about levels of support, in depending on the polls, 80 to 90-plus percent of Israeli society is with the government on all of these things. And Israel was always shown as sort of like, oh, LGBTQ paradise, democracy, liberal values, a lot of secular Jews, not so religious. They all agree with this Amalek language. They all agree with this most like vile, messianic, apocalyptic type shit. And on top of that, their military units are openly wearing patches of Greater Israel and the Third Temple, which would require us to, which would require the Israelis to destroy the Al-Aqsa compound, the third holiest site in Islam. I mean, I just don't understand. I just don't understand what's going on here.
And now we got gay black liberals lecturing us and calling us musty anti-Semites.
Wait, we're going to get, wait, you're such a spoiler. Let me get to it. We got a little bit of buildup.
I need you guys to get the reference.
Stop it.
Yet over time, many world leaders buckled. They buckled under the pressure of a biased media, radical Islamist constituencies, and anti-Semitic mobs. There's a familiar saying, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Well, for many countries here, when the going got tough, you caved. And here's the shameful result of that collapse. For much of the past 2 years, Israel has had to fight a seven-front war against barbarism with many of your nations opposing us.
That's the buildup to this whole big Hasbara campaign. I know we're tired of looking at BB Space, but this is important. You guys got to like listen to his stupid, not you guys, you guys know, but the viewers, you guys got to listen to his like the ridiculous things that he's saying. So this, after he gets to speak to an empty room at the UN, he gets to meet with some of our biggest influencers.
Christian influencers?
Okay.
You said, you talked about the woke right. He said, I call it the woke right. That's a brilliant. The woke right, because these people, you know, they're not any different from the woke left. I mean, they're insane. They're mm-hmm. But they're actually meeting on some of the things. And what we have to do is we have to secure that part of the base of our support in the United States. That is being challenged systematically. A lot of this is done with money. Money of NGOs, vast. Money of governments, vaster. Okay? We have to fight back. How do we fight back? Our influences. I think you should also talk to them if you have a chance. To that community, they're very important. Mm. And secondly, we're going to have to use the tools of battle. You know, the weapons change over time. You can't fight today with swords. That doesn't work very well, okay? And you can't fight with cavalry. That doesn't work very well. And you have these new things, you know, like drones, things like that. I won't get into that. But we have to fight with the weapons that apply to the battlefields in which we're engaged. And the most important ones are the social media. And the most important purchase that is going on right now is classwares. TikTok. Number one. And I hope it goes through because it's it can be consequential. Mm-hmm. And the other one, what's the other one that's most important?
X.
Yeah. That's very good. And, you know, so we have to talk to Elon. He's not an enemy. He's a friend. We should talk to him. Now, if we can get those two things, we get a lot. And I could go on other things, but that's not the point right now. We have to fight the fight.
So much to unpack. First of all, he talks about drones. Why are you talking about drones with protesters?
Anyway. And also new technologies. Drones and other technologies I won't get into.
Right. So, and then I love that he goes, what is their most important purchase? The one goes, followers. Someone said followers.
Followers.
That's a lot. Anyway. No, our most important purchase is TikTok. So TikTok is being purchased by Larry Ellison for the most part. This is a sale that has been kind of organized by Trump to kind of soothe BB's nerves, I guess. The TikTok sale is being called by some people as a shakedown. Some experts, Trump has signed an executive order which approves the partial sale to his allies, Larry Ellison of Oracle, Rupert and Lachlan Murdoch of obviously Fox and the Wall Street Journal, Andreessen Horowitz, and then others and others. Before closing, the White House asked investors if they'd make a payment to the U.S. government in the low billions, to which, of course, they all said yes. They called it a finder's fee. Finance scholars and historians are saying the businesses will stop innovating if the whole game is now rent seeking and ingratiating yourself with Trump. Another one said these are shakedown schemes. CEOs are horrified, but they're terrified to speak publicly. TikTok is the most popular youth platform in the United States. Oracle will now host all American TikTok data. Murdoch's will sit at the ownership table. ByteDance keeps the algorithm, but the algorithm becomes specific to the United States. So it will be geared towards U.S. politics. So a pipeline to shape this, what these specific people will see. So these, you're getting a media filtered through this content filtered through Ellison. And then you wind up with this.
Imagine supporting people who start wars just to lose the wars so they can cry about it and then try it all again.
You must see anti-Semites are literally obsessed with Jews. Now walk with me. While you must see anti-Semites are stacking eviction notices, Jews are out here stacking up businesses.
Jews control all the industries. Maybe if you spent more time taking notes from successful people, you wouldn't have to spend your nights and weekends spreading hate from your anonymous account with an anime profile picture.
Do you work as hard as Jews? Do you network like Jews? No, because you're too busy cheering on a group of musty terrorists who smell like dirty earring backs. And if we're gonna keep it real, you're really mad because your income is giving side hustle.
Period.
How you gonna hate from outside, Shabbat? You can't even get in!
We got broke-ass Cisco and Real Housewives of Orange County. We're paying for this! U.S. taxpayers are paying for this.
Fam, who is that for? Who is it for? Because I see the right wing, the people who are extremely religious, who are not approving of the lifestyle of the black gentleman on the right. They are upset at this because they view Israel and the Jews as being complicit with brainwashing children with the LGBT. That's the right criticism. That's not our criticism, but that's the right criticism of the state. Oh, the Jews are brainwashing our children into buying into the LGBTQ code. And then you got a video of this gay dude being the smuggest Zionist possible. And I warn people, man, there's nothing, there's no one more psychotic than like these gay black liberals, these gay black conservatives. They're the most psychotic motherfuckers you will find in the world. But when I see this video, I'm like, dude, this is great. We need to Pied Piper these people. I think we need to Pied Piper these people in particular. We need to artificially prop these people up.
I agree. I agree, because they're just so ridiculous and it's so bad that you need to be like, this is it. This is their pinnacle. This is what they're offering us.
Yeah, the same way that Fox News invites people like Emma Vigeland and all the dumb lefties on so they can make leftists look dumb. So they set up a Pied Piper. That's what we need to do with these Zionists. We need to find the most annoying, cringe Zionist influencers just like this and share their content.
We have a list of them. I'll get it to you guys. Follow Gen X Girl on X if you're not following her. She has the list of influencers. BB ran right onto Fox right after this hell happened.
President Trump has been an incredible ally of Israel, incredible friend. We've had no one like him. What he did in his first term in recognizing Jerusalem as our capital, moving the American embassy there, recognizing our sovereignty over the Golan Heights, getting out of the disastrous Iran deal, and then, of course, now joining us in the effort to prevent Iran from getting nuclear weapons by taking out some of these nuclear sites with us. I think it's great. I read somewhere this ridiculous slide. President Trump does what he does because he decides what's in America's best interest. And I've said this often, I don't decide a thing for President Trump. He is the most independent leader and amazing leader that I've seen in all my years. And I think many people in the world see that. So the idea that I, in any ways that I boast that I control him, that's ridiculous. It's a lie. And I don't think it. I think America's blessed with a very strong and independent leader.
This is after he talks about Trump, lists off all the things Trump is doing for him.
Right.
He said, I don't think it either. Man, you really overcompensating, aren't you? I don't even think it, guys. I promise you.
They veto everything at the UN. They bombed Iran for us. They took over TikTok for us. I don't control Trump.
What control?
Also, and I we have kind of avoided the Charlie Kirk thing on here because I don't really care of the who's and the what's and what happened in Utah. What I do care about is the aftermath, which so the rumors swirl, whatever you guys choose to believe, there were Jewish or Zionist donors that had pulled back from TPUSA in the months leading up to this. After the assassination, the floodgates of donations reopened with Ben Shapiro leading the charge. All the Zionist money flows right back in. Why am I saying this? Because they're accelerating TPUSA expansions into high schools and elementary schools. Oklahoma's education chief has now pledged to put a TPUSA chapter in every high school in the state. And will include Bible instruction and prayer videos for Trump. The U.S. Department of Education, it has announced it is formally partnering with TPUSA as part of a coalition to create patriotic curricula ahead of the 250th birthday. The chief education officer pledged God-centered virtuous education. So this is another, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because it's another facet of this Zionist takeover of the United States.
So the plan of, let me get this straight. The plan of MAGA and the Republican Party to compete with China, who is dominating in AI tech innovation, China, who is dominating in STEM degrees. You have a state that is what, last in the country? They're planning to counter China. And their plan to compete with education and as the United States continue to fail is to create Charlie Kirk clones all over the country. Dude, I always bring this up because I want people to understand that we, and I'm talking to Christopher here particularly, like we, the communists, we were trying to help you guys out for some reason. We try to help give you the blueprint you need to be able to compete with China. You guys see how the capitalists, they have no plan. Their plan to compete with China in the incoming Chinese century is to create TPUSA in high schools. I keep asking Trump supporters, what have Donald Trump built ever since he was elected? What are they doing to accomplish their campaign promise? Because it was Donald Trump. I remember Vivek Ramaswamy saying this all the time. Well, if you elect us, we will fix the mistake that Biden made and we will compete with China. We will grow the working class and we will compete with China. They haven't done anything close resembling that. The only thing they have done is label streets after Christopher Columbus and now doing war nonsense. Fucking making memorial coins out of Charlie Kirk. These are the things that they're doing while China is building shit. You understand? And they're re-innovating housing, creating amazing housing structures that completely eliminated homelessness in China. Countless innovations that China dominated the AI game. This is what Trump and them is doing. So I always mention people. They have no backup plan, guys. If you think that our ruling class has this backup plan, they do not. But I think, Chris, you want to chime in. Feel free, guys.
No. I just want to say, we are, first of all, God-centered virtuous education. I don't know. Why don't you help with your so-called family values and give healthcare and affordable childcare to all these families that are struggling out there? Why don't we build and have like nice roads, nice metros, fast trains, nice bridges? What is this God-centered virtuous education? Feels like we're in some dystopia, like everyone's going to go and get this like packaged, tech, kind of God thing with the, and of course you have these tech moguls thinking there's demons and they're fighting and they're this and who knows. And I don't know about humanity and fuck humanity. And you're going to get this kind of education package. Meanwhile, everything around them is crumbling. Yeah. Everything. And you know what I fear? I fear that that's the pipeline for radicalization, because those kids go through this. Then all of a sudden they come out and they say, wow, everything's collapsing in front of us. And with my education, I need to be a soldier for Christ. Or this, we have to defend this Judeo-Christian civilization. And so they start saying, who's the enemy? The enemy are those ones over there. You see what I'm saying? This is exactly part of a strategy. This is a concerted effort. If people aren't seeing this, you got to wake up. This is exactly what we spoke about decades ago about bringing the war home. All yep. this radicalization that happened in Vietnam, in all of these different wars abroad, yep. that people in the far right went, trained, came back, formed militias, started arming themselves, started speaking this language. And that was also used by the power that probably helped facilitate that to further clamp down our freedoms and to further surveil us. And you just have this succession here. I am very much of the opinion that don't let a good crisis go to waste is absolutely the motto now in this situation. Yeah. And clearly, I don't know, Nick, I don't know about you or Sarah. I don't know about your cultures of grieving, but to all of a sudden have a spouse assassinated and then don't to go out a week later laughing, joking, it's a good time. I was thinking to myself today, I said, she's probably being asked out on dates already by guys in this sphere because yeah. there's a lot of cash, a lot of power, a lot of prestige. And these people just don't care.
They don't care,
ultimately. I don't even know if they were ever really in love, as I understand it. I don't know. But maybe it's just my perspective. But, you know, I come from a culture where people are, like, beating their chests and hollering, and women wear black. You know, if you lose a son forever, you know, it's just like that's the culture of where I come from. So to see all of a sudden, let's raise money. We're making money. Oh, my husband was assassinated. Can you give us money? I'm like, what?
It's a death code. It's a death code. You guys have to realize they do not value life the same way we do. They don't even view love the same way that we do.
No.
Like, we marry for love, for family. They marry for power, prestige. Erica clearly couldn't wait for this motherfucker to be gone. Like, they don't marry for the same thing that we do. So we have, and this is to the point of the segment, like, you guys realize, like, these states in the South, they have infrastructure ratings, and the UN did a survey. You have experts that did surveys of the infrastructure of Mississippi, Alabama, Oklahoma, and a lot of these southern states. And they said their infrastructure ranks worse, not as bad, but they said worse than what we categorize as the third world. I don't like that term, but they use that. I like to use the global South, the global majority. But they say based on what they categorize as the third world, the South is worse than that. But instead of investing in infrastructure, they're invested in this death cult. They're investing in probably enough TPUSA to wrap it right around. So do you guys see how perverse the priorities are in our society? I always like to, I don't know how you like to describe it, Chris, but I like to describe it to people that the capitalist society is also a central planning model. Like, they have a central planning model based on chaos and anarchy and death. So they want to prop up a military-industrial complex. They want to prop up propaganda schools and units. Sarah, we joke about it all the time, how China's horrible at propaganda. So China don't have time to invest in that stuff because they worry about investing in infrastructure, improving the people's lives. Look at what our ruling class invests their time in. Trump sending fucking National Guards to Portland because he got offended they put guillotines up. Like, it is centrally planned. It's just chaos. That's what you get when you allow the capitalists to control it. But Sarah, I know you want to.
Well, let's talk about SMO Portland. First of all, this is Pam Bondi.
Whether you're a former FBI director, whether you're a former head of an intel community, whether you are a current state or local elected official, whether you're a billionaire funding organizations to try to keep Donald Trump out of office, everything is on the table. We will investigate you and we will end the weaponization. No longer will there be a two-tier system of justice. And we are working hand in hand, Director Patel and I, Todd Blanche, with our incredible intel community, Tulsi Gabbard, John Radcliffe, going nonstop around the clock. People will be held accountable.
I just got done talking about how we're interfering in elections around the world and threatening to bomb the Kremlin. And this person wants me to take it seriously that there's people that don't want Trump to get elected and you're going to arrest them. So they go to Portland.
Observe criminal activity, including They are fighting people.
And will be making targeted arrests.
Like, it's really just comical. Like, I don't really understand that. Like, it's like Law and Order for the sake of it, or the show of Law and Order, I guess. What are your thoughts?
I like talking to conservatives because I like busting their balls about their whole fiscal conservative ideology. Right.
Yeah.
Like, you guys realize, I don't know the number, but think about how much millions of dollars Donald Trump is wasting. I'm sure if I can dig for a sec, I can find a number. But they are wasting millions of dollars on performative PR stuff, because we know why they're doing this, right? They're doing this so Republicans can run on cracking down on blue cities in the midterms. It's political.
Yep.
So that's what you guys are spending your taxpayer money on. That's why I love going on like people like Jake Shields show. I'm like, man, I thought you guys was fiscal conservative. What's up with this belief that you guys support? You know what I mean? We are the ones who have, and this is why I like talking about it like this. We are the ones who have the most efficient policies, the most efficient plan. We're not going to waste millions of dollars doing stuff with fucking law enforcement and just to appease the authoritarian hinges of a small base you want to win over in the midterm. These are things that the capitalist class do because they don't care about wasting money. It means nothing to them. Actually having a coherent, well-planned society means nothing. Let's have a police state that's arresting our citizens. It's chaos. Pure chaos. But go ahead, Chris, Sarah.
I just want to say, I mean, we've been in the movement a long time. I wrote back during Occupy. I wrote an article on the prison industrial complex and on the rampant militarization of our police forces. And that was back then, 2011. We are old. We're old. We're veterans of the movement. Long time. Long before it was cool and chic to be a communist. I was a communist, right? You were in it, you know? So when I think about it, we were saying back then during the height of the war on terror, after the buildup, the surge and all this stuff, we were saying all of this surplus military equipment that's being bought by small and large police departments in the U.S. is a very dangerous precedent. It should stop. And we were campaigning. People were like, oh, you are conspiracy theorists. Oh, you are doomsayers. Oh, you are just fear-mongering. No. No, because why does a small police department need automatic weapons, military-style vehicles, the Stingray that they put on top to capture cell phone communications, right? Why does a small town in Vermont need a Stingray? They need a Stingray because they want to monitor communications both far and wide in cities and in rural areas. And so if I am going to sit here and fearmonger, I want everyone to know that my fears are that the United States is increasingly militarizing its police forces to use in situations like this, to use in a political way to go after enemies. And I'm against it across the board. I don't care who's doing it in the United States, but it is a dangerous escalation. And what we're seeing there should be something that should be condemned, right, left, up, down. I don't care. It should be condemned.
That's why the right wing criticism of the George Floyd protests rings hollow to me. I don't understand it, because that was people challenging this new rising police state power. And they don't understand it. George Floyd was just a symbol in a tragedy what happened. But we use the overall incident to highlight the militarization you're talking about, Chris. Because why is our ruling class declaring war against their own people? That's how I like to discuss it. Why is the NYPD declaring war on their own people? Why is the LAPD declaring war on their own people? And people are like, Nick, what do you mean when you say that? If you compare our police budgets, it surpasses the military budgets of every other country except China. When you look at the military budget for the NYPD, it is three times higher than the military budget for North Korea, the DPRK, the country
that
is
bigger than the budget for Ukraine prior to the start of the SMO.
So the left need to start. That's a mind blowing stat. That's a mind blowing stat, Sarah. So that's how we need to frame it. I frame this to right. I shut any critique that Jake Shields could have had down. He didn't have any he would have down me, because I'm like, why are we okay with our ruling class waging war against us? You know why they do this? Fighting against the police state and being supportive of the George Floyd protests or any protest against the police state is the most class war thing you can possibly do, because in order to fight against rising dissent in this country and discontent with, you know, the working class feeling like they're not able to make it, with the rise of homelessness, how do socialist countries solve these problems? They provide housing. They create they give people jobs. They give people a vision for the future. Our ruling class have no intention of doing any of that shit. So they said, you guys can protest and you can get upset at the government all you want. What we're going to do in the meantime, as we see more people rising in class consciousness, is we're going to build up a military police state. You guys think they're doing that on accident?
Right.
You guys think they're building up cop cities on accident? They're getting ready for the incoming general strike. And whenever Americans really start shutting shit down, they already had the apparatus that American people gave them permission to build because they were afraid of some immigrants. They were afraid of brown people. They felt afraid. And they used these fears in order to build their power so they can shut shit down when they need. And this is coming, guys, because the American people are getting more upset by the day. On the left and the right, you're seeing more protests. You're seeing the government weaponize its power even more. But I know you guys want to chime in. So feel free, Chris.
Well, no, I want to get your opinion, both of your opinion on, because Chris mentioned bring the war home. We've talked about, you know, violence begetting violence. Well, of course, the violence in America continues. I think every day we have at least one episode or a mass shooting. Well, today, we'll hear all.
We're going to talk about here today, as I said, was happening at 10:25 a.m. at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which is located at 4285 McCandless Road. During this incident, what we know right now is that a 40-year-old suspect from Burton, he's a male, he drove his vehicle through the front doors of the church. He then exited his vehicle, firing several rounds at individuals within the church. 10 gunshot victims have been transported to local hospitals at this time, including one who has been deceased. Officers who were trained immediately responded to the area. One was a DNR officer, and then one was a Grand Blanc Township officer, where they met the suspect and they engaged in gunfire with that particular individual, neutralizing that suspect. And that suspect is no longer with us. As I said, it is a 40-year-old male from Burton. During all this incident as well, there was a fire that occurred, and we believe that that was deliberately set by the suspect. We do believe that we will find additional victims once we have that scene secure.
So we have a male crashes into a Mormon church with his truck. Apparently there were up to 4 unexploded IEDs in the truck. The truck itself has an Iraqi conflict veteran license plate, okay, and 2 huge American flags on the back. Let me see if I can do. I always boomer out on this. Let's see if I can. Here he is. There he is. Thomas Jake Sanford, an Iraq war veteran. And you mentioned bringing the war home. I just thought that was kind of interesting. I don't know anything about this guy's politics or his motivations. I found it.
So this happened today?
Today.
Okay, so you got breaking news to me. I've been in meetings and stuff today.
That's pretty much all that I know up to this point. I'm not speculating. I just, one of the reasons why I even bring this up, I hate to talk about breaking news because I don't like to speculate on the show. But no. As soon as these stories hit, the Zionists grab them, and then it became Christians are being attacked in a very Muslim state. Well, Mormons aren't Christians, first of all.
Unitarian Christians, correct. Exactly. Yeah,
they're not Christians. They believe in a totally different Jesus. And this is a older white male, an Iraqi war veteran, who, I mean, at face value, might be MAGA or at least... Yeah. Patriotic.
Don't you guys think it's weird that Laura Loomer predicted a bloody summer a few months ago?
Well, she's been predicting a 9/11 for like a year now. So we're waiting for her to tell us what she knows.
It's almost like these dynasty spectacles happen. But go ahead, Chris. Go ahead. Feel free, brother.
No. I just want to, like, I think back to, you know, okay, graduate school can be good for some things. And I when I was ruminating over Amy Cesaire's, you know, discourse on colonialism, you know, that idea of what eventually became known popular as the imperial boomerang, you know, where Amy Cesaire is speaking in the French Assembly and basically saying, all of you are somewhat horrified at the crimes of Nazism, but none of you were horrified at the crimes of the colonial powers, including France. What France did in the colonies, butchering, maiming, killing, genocide, you didn't care. When it came to Europe and it came on inside European borders, everybody was suddenly horrified. This is the greatest crime in humanity. And that's, of course, you know, Nick knows popularly, people are like, okay, Hitler, of course, awful, fascism, horrible. But why isn't King Leopold of Belgium also at the same level when he killed 20 plus million, you know, Black Africans in the Congo, right? Of various tribes and ethnic groups. So when we talk about the tools of empire coming home, don't forget, this man is an instrument of empire.
Yes, right? That's why it's kind of, there's a bow on all of it.
Absolutely. I mean, these people are trained, and I was in the military. I never deployed, and I got out so as not to deploy, as I was against it, especially what ended up being the Afghan disaster. But you are trained and an instrument of war. You are propagandized to think a certain way about life and reality, and then you're set loose. Think about this. You go to war, you butcher, you maim, you kill, you drop bombs, and then you come home and they're like, okay, you're a combat veteran. Here's the, you know, the VA. Here's some benefits. Here's your GI Bill and have a good life. And what do you think these people do? You know, when we think about that, when we try to think about it and analyze it, what are they supposed to do? They are now susceptible to a whole range of issues that come, not only PTSD and the family issues that arise and the drug abuse and the alcoholism and things like that, but the propensity for violence and now a kind of Manichaean worldview that has been shaped and that can easily be stoked. You know, I don't want to say that this is like a telephone type thing, you know, this back in the Cold War where you can be triggered by words and things, but there's a complex structure that gets created and you see the world in that way. And critical thinking is, you know, discounted because, you know, as an officer, I was a critical thinker and that got me in all the trouble that I, you know, could ever be, you know, I could have ever gotten into because I was like, well, this doesn't make sense. And they're like, shut up. Your job isn't to think, you know? So I think that this is something that we really have to grapple with, I think. And this is something that we really have to unpack. And a lot of Americans don't want to do it. But think about this guy. If you think about the profile, this guy, Timothy McVeigh, right? There's a lot of people with military, paramilitary training that have gone this kind of route. What it means, who's to blame? Was it the word they, you know, there's so many things that I want to unpack in this. But just to go back to your earlier point, I think that this entire sequence of events that we're seeing might be separate, but they're being capitalized on by powerful forces to stoke the tension in the country, to create further radicalization and polarization. You rightfully point out that the Zionist media immediately jumped on this, that somehow this is an Islam thing and it's Judeo-Christianity versus Islam. Even though, as you rightfully point out, Mormons are non-Trinitarian Christians, if you can even call them Christians. Yeah. They're heterodox Christians, if you want to be, you know, generous academically. But they're not like Catholics, Orthodox, and Protestant in this way, right? They're totally outside. They don't believe in the Trinity in the same way. And they are against the dogmas of the early church and the ecumenical councils in that way. But you see, okay, Jesus Christ, it was a gun shooting. Muslims must have done it. Meanwhile, I just want to make sure, I wanted to plug this because we didn't get to it in the earlier part. This BS about Judeo-Christianity. Oh. Really bothers me because
it's Judeo-evangelicism. Can we be serious? It's not Christianity.
Right. Because I want to say I have been to Palestine as a person who went to, you know, seminary, the Greek Orthodox seminary. I spent time with the Greek Orthodox patriarch in Jerusalem and got to meet the Armenians, the Copts, the Syriacs, the whole crew, because I got to spend time at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And one thing was clear, that the second biggest landowner, as I pointed out before, is the Greek Orthodox Patriarchate in Jerusalem. So what's happening right now? The Armenian church, which is smaller and less powerful, and Armenia, of course, is in a delicate geopolitical situation with what's going on, what happened in Nagorno-Karabakh and Artsakh, now with Azerbaijan, Albania, Cambodia, whatever Trump wants to say. The Armenian Patriarchate is getting its bank accounts frozen and its land taken by eminent domain by the Israeli government. Whoa, so much for Armenia was the first Christian state, by the way, in the world. Armenia and Ethiopia are in competition, which I always say is very interesting because people are like, oh, Christianity, white European. I'm like, no, no, brother, Ethiopia, Coptic Christianity. The Ethiopians were at the forefront of Christianity. Mm-hmm. But when you look at this, these small communities are the first major targets of ongoing Zionist expansion in East Jerusalem and in the Palestinian, other Palestinian territories, because they own prime real estate that a lot of Zionist organizations want to grab. And this is also part of the expansion for what could be a third temple. So right now there's an ongoing court case. I think the patriarchs of Jerusalem, of the Holy Land, just put out a statement yesterday, I think it was, I saw it, about this situation with the Armenian Patriarchate. So I just want to let everyone know that all this BS about, oh, Judeo-Christianity, shared values, meanwhile, Christians are being targeted in the Holy Land. Palestinian, Armenian, Assyrian, Coptic, Ethiopian Christians are being targeted because they represent a link to a past that the Zionists want to erase. And they want to extinguish them. They like the evangelicals to talk about Christianity. They don't like them to proselytize there. They want them to stay in America and keep believing what they believe and to put on the yarmulke and go touch the wall of the, you know, the Roman Fort Antonia. But okay, in any case, this is a real serious concern for people. So I want us to continue to speak truth about this because a lot of people don't know. And I even see a lot of like the ortho bros and the trad Catholics, some of whom are pro-Israel. And I'm like, do you know what they're doing to the Latin Patriarchate? Do you know what they're doing to the Orthodox Patriarchate and the Oriental Orthodox churches over there? We got to continue to voice this and to continue to demystify and bust this entire propaganda about Judeo-Christianity. Doesn't exist. Never did.
Yeah, and again, I don't know anything about this. The guy could be Christian for all we know. It could be revenge for what happened in Utah to Charlie Kirk because that Mormons were involved in that. It could be literally anything. I just wanted to show you guys just so at least you could have some foundation of rational thinking before you get bombarded by Nick, you're muted if you're going to say something before you get bombarded by the propaganda campaign on Twitter that we're paying to brainwash us. So yeah.
Chris, your friend Eddie, I saw from Midwestern March, he had a great video that went super fucking viral on X, where he explained how many Christians are realizing the Judeo-Christian lie was a Zionist scam this entire time. As someone who wasn't religious, I always viewed that extremely weird, the entire Judeo-Christian link. And this is what a lot of evangelicals, Eddie Liger, my friend, I love Eddie Liger. He had a great video. Well, you suppose how many Muslims view Jesus and compared to how people who worship Jesus are treated in Israel. A lot of these Christians are just now realizing that. Like, and I find that strange. If I was that into a faith, I definitely would know who my ops are. Either way, they're just now realizing that the Judeo-Christian scam is all about turning and making them serve the Zionist agenda. Your job as the useful idiot goyim Christian to serve the Zionist master. But go ahead, sir. I know you want to chime in for free.
It's a completely Anglo concept. It's a total British and American. It's just completely unique to those two. People don't talk about Judeo-Christian values anywhere else in the world.
Nope. They don't.
And that's why it was always weird to me that. Well, I guess I understand it. It's pure evil how the Germans and people of German descent managed to like shift the blame for what they did to Jewish people to Muslims and Arabs, because Muslims and Arabs, they live in peace and coexistence for a long time. Jews had to flee Europe. Like, what the fuck? Like, how many times did Jews flee Europe? And Nazi Christians? Like, this is a whole other rabbit hole. That's why I was always confused about this. The second I looked into it, like, obviously I had my young, dumb liberal days as a teenager where I knew nothing about anything. But the second I looked into it, I'm like, what? This makes no damn sense. Go ahead, Chris. I think you want to chime in.
Wait, I want to ask you, where during the Inquisition and during the periods of pogroms and anti-Semitic violence in Europe, where did the Jews go? Where do you think they went?
They were taken care of by their Arab brothers and sisters.
That's right. They went to the Muslim world. They went to the Ottoman Empire. They went to the Islamic world, to North Africa. They went to the Holy Land, and they were taken care of and protected as people of the book by Islamic rulers.
Yeah.
By the way, if you go, because I studied at a university in Turkey for a summer, if you go to Istanbul and you go to the oldest Jewish synagogue for the Sephardic Jews, and you go it's near the Fanar, where the Greek Orthodox Patriarchate is. If you go inside, the area where you read the Torah scrolls from is an ark. And why is it an ark? Because the Ottoman Empire welcomed the Jews of Iberian Peninsula, and it was an ark of salvation for them. This was what the rabbi told me there.
I'm going to start using that. That's good.
Yes. And so when I went there as a young student in 2009, I was in college, and I was like, oh my God, this is part of the propaganda to cover this up, that Islam at that time, today, oh my God, bearded man, they're going to kill everybody. No. Islam was the most welcoming and said, come here, you can live, you can work. In fact, Jews in the Ottoman Empire had very prominent positions. Merchants, government, this, that, you name it. And they were protected, and so were their sites. So I just want to say that this whole mythology needs to be debunked, and we need to have a proper understanding of history. Not only the history of what Christian violence did to the Jewish people and to the Muslims, because there's this neo-crusader ideology at work, even by our own Secretary of War, quote unquote, who loves, you know, Jerusalem cross and let's go Deus Vult. I'm like, you know, Salah ad-Din drove your asses out and then allowed Christians to worship freely. You know, I just want to throw it out there that they kind of think like, they destroyed Christianity. No, Christianity flourished. There's millions of Palestinian, Lebanese, Syrian, Iraqi Christians, Egyptian, you name it. They're all there. They were living in peace. It was the Christians from Britain and United States and France that stoked the tensions and the sectarianism in the region to pin them against one another. So we got to debunk this. We have a really big obligation to continue to teach correct history and correct analysis than this BS garbage that you see on social media about a war with Islam, a war on Judeo-Christian values. BS. The war goes way back, and it's a lot different than how they're portraying it.
Well said, Chris.
I think that's all we have. Final thoughts from either of you? Nick, why don't you tell everybody what happened?
Essentially, I was cooking, as I always do. You guys know I'm always in the lab cooking, and they decided to blow that lab up. They're like, hell no. Bro, Chris, you had no idea. That stream was about to be so huge because you can tell because I saw 300 people.
Oh, it happened before. When did it happen? It happened before the show even?
They pulled on my stream like 15 minutes after we went live. I had Danny on. Actually, it was like 25 minutes in. Then they pulled us while we was live. We had so many people watching. We had Danny. You guys know Danny Ifong. He's a huge name on YouTube. It's been a while since we had him on. And then right as Benjamin Netanyahu got booed at the UN, I literally had to change my show. So we had I had breaking news about Netanyahu being booed at the UN with Danny Haifong on. Then I had Chris coming on. It was scheduled to be a great show. Then you two were like, hell no, bro.
Hell no.
What the fuck you think you're doing? Putting on a good show.
So what do you want to, should people go over to Rumble then? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, okay. We're making a big shift to Rumble. As I mentioned earlier, I was about to rage quit YouTube altogether.
No, don't. You'll probably get it back. Yeah. Build up
See, I'm glad I have people who are actually rational around me, like Sarah and Zoya.
We got ours back.
They talked me out of it. I was about like, man, fuck YouTube. So I'll still be on YouTube, but I'm making a heavy push towards Rumble. I always do really well on X. You guys do really well on X. X is great for streaming. trying to build my Twitch up. Essentially, we got to make sure we have a lot of different options. It is RBN. They always find a way to fuck with our pay. They've been targeting us because we got multiple strikes on some bullshit. So that's why I'm looking at building other platforms, because it's only a matter of time. And even if I come back on YouTube, it's still bad because they throttle you after you get those strikes and warnings, and they slow down how much you are recommended. So that's why I'm moving A1 over to Rumble. YouTube is a dying ship anyway. So I love appreciate DDG. Thank you for giving me a chance to rant a little bit to end this weekend off. I love the work you guys are doing. Much love to you guys.
We'll start pushing people over to the Rumble.
Absolutely.
I appreciate you guys.
You're doing. Love
thank
the work
you, Nick. We will talk to you, Nick.
Take care.
So we're gonna do it.
Super chats.
There we go. Thank you so much. Plate of Hamas. Don says Trump even cheats when he plays golf. So rest assured, he will cheat on any agreement he signs. I mean, we don't negotiate in good faith in anything. And I think that this year, 2025, has been the most blatant display of that. Was we bomb Iran while we're negotiating with them. We're supplying Ukraine while we're negotiating with Russia. We were negotiating with Venezuela when we started shooting their boats. So yes, they want a monopoly on violence. They have it.
They have it.
And thank you, new member Zorbro. Thank you to all of you. We will work on a guest. Oh, what?
Here.
Oh.
History didn't start at the Crusades or 710. That is correct. That is correct. It didn't start. And it goes back, and we have a lot more history to make. So hopefully we're going to continue to bring you all the latest and continue to build a better world.
As we enter the phase of multipolarity. Thank you, guys. Thank you to everyone. We will continue to do our midweek Wednesday show. Hopefully we could grab a big guest for you guys this week. Other than that, we will see you in the spaces, and then we will see you again same time, same place on Sunday.
See you soon.